Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening to you all. This is the Business Day Spotlight, your destination for African business made simple. My name is Mdio Gavaza, and for today, we're getting into a conversation about healthcare work in South Africa. We often talk about the unemployment crisis in the country. I believe, depending on which stats you are looking at, we're looking at around 32-34% unemployment in the country, much higher amongst the youth. And often not take into consideration what are considered to be discouraged workers. You know, we often, you know, look at people that are actively looking for employment. So today we are looking at the healthcare sector, and we are probably looking at the part of the healthcare sector that many of us would not imagine would be facing an unemployment crisis. But, such is the reality in South Africa, and that is around doctors. So for today, we are joined by Craig Comrie. He is the CEO of ProfMed. ProfMed is a medical aid that was designed specifically for professionals. Many of you may have heard of that name, that brand, and they've actually come up with a platform called FinDoctor that is trying by all means to actually help to place some of these unemployed and trained doctors in the market. Craig, greetings to you today.
Good to be with you, Madiwa.
Craig, when I was growing up, being a doctor was one of those things that everyone aspired to. Traditionally, they say you should go and be a doctor, a lawyer, or an accountant. These are the professions that are going to guarantee you employment. These are the ones that no matter what happens, you are almost guaranteed of a job. But the fact that ProfMed has come up with a platform like this, suggests that perhaps that is not the reality. Maybe you could just give us some color around the rationale for putting something like this together. But more importantly, maybe painting a picture of what unemployment amongst doctors is looking like in South Africa.
Yeah, great. One of the things that our origin in ProfMed comes from is the doctors themselves. So a few doctors more than 60 years got together and said, how do we look after our medical scheme requirements or our healthcare benefits? And so they put together what is ProfMed today. Today, we cover more than half of the doctors in the marketplace at the moment. And you can see the link, the clear link and purpose in terms of us taking care of the doctors. And over the last 2 years, we've been seeing, specifically 2024, we saw 800 doctors actually be without work, exiting community service and wanting to get into the public sector, the jobs that might be available, but not all those jobs are funded. And so they're looking at what they can do in the private sector. And it's not so easy to start a practice. You need a little bit of capital. You need a client base. And so this was the problem that started back then and has grown. This year, we hear 1,800 unemployed young doctors. And it's amazing after, and we've seen matric results recently, but after all this time of them having to study, spend 7 years of their life studying, these are the most qualified people that we can get in the country, yet we don't have employment for them. And so we saw this need start to grow some years ago, and we decided that we have to do something about it. What is interesting about the doctor's profession, so many of our members who are established doctors are in fact in the late stages of their practices. So they are looking in the next 10 years to probably retire. And some of those doctors feel that they probably could take on a partner or even sell their practices because they have an established client base. And so we see that the average age of GPs in the country is above 55 years of age. And so it really is important that we brought the need of these older established practices closer to these young unemployed doctor spaces. And we believe it's a perfect match. It's a match that delivers on both people's needs. And it is as a start on Finder or Find the Doctor on our Finder platform. It's a bit of a dating service. I guess we're in the week of Valentine's Day. So it's a service that brings the two needs together, and we're hoping that there is long-term employment and career fulfillment for those young doctors going forward. What we need in South Africa is doctors. In fact, a little bit more on the background is the WHO says for every 1,000 people, you should have 2.5 doctors. And that's the ratio and the worldwide best practice. In South Africa, we have 0.33 doctor for every 1,000 people. So there's no doubt we need doctors. I'm an accountant. So if you multiply it out, we're short of 100,000 doctors in South Africa. We have just over 40,000. We need another 100,000. The problem is not always that we need the 100,000. The problem is we need to fund 100,000 doctors. So both in producing more doctors and keeping them employed, whether it be in the public sector or the private sector, we need to be able to afford those doctors, but certainly produce more in the country and retain them.
You know, Craig, as you're talking, and I like the fact that you ended off by talking about the fact that the problem is the funding aspect, right? Because clearly there's a huge need for doctors, and anyone who has spent hours, at a hospital, you know, waiting to be seen by either a specialist or a GP or in an emergency, in an emergency ward, knows, you know, just how necessary something like this is. This is literally a daily reality. This is everyday life. This is real life. And it boggles the mind to even hear that there are this many doctors that are unemployed. My question is, from the funding aspect, you know, just so that maybe we can really fully understand where the wheels are falling off, is to say, what is the disconnect, right? Because you've touched on a number of things. You've touched on people that come out of community service and are not being able to find something in the public sector, not able to find something in the private sector. Starting a practice is a bit tough. You're also talking about the fact that, sometimes the funding opportunity, but that funding opportunity, that's the part that for me is not making sense, because people, it's not like there is a decline in the number of people that are getting sick, that are getting injured. If anything, a lot of those numbers are trending upwards, right? And it's not like there's a shortage of medical aid societies, companies such as yours, you know, that are helping in that particular aspect. So I'm understanding a piece of the equation, but you'll forgive me, I'm still really finding it hard that 1,800 young doctors are finding it hard to find employment in a market that needs 100,000 more, you know, medical professionals and doctors to be employed.
Yeah, I think what you're describing is the very fact that the healthcare system that we have in South Africa needs significant change in and a real overhaul. It's perhaps where the intent of the National Health Insurance Act is. So I'm not going to go into the details of the National Health Insurance Act, but I think at the core, healthcare globally is becoming such a huge expense in terms of how it grows year on year. So I'm talking both for a public and a private sector, whether it's in South Africa or whether you're in China, India, US, UK, Europe. It's the same. The issue in healthcare is that typically we find that we have people who can provide some funding head towards private sector health insurance or medical schemes. And what you see even in the private sector is the medical scheme premium increases go up well above inflation. Now, it is reflected in the public sectors as well, even in the national health systems in those aforementioned countries that I actually have mentioned. What happens in those systems is the health inflation is usually double what inflation is. So if we're sitting at 3%, I can guarantee you health inflation's anywhere between 6 and 8, if not 10%. And it's driven by a few factors. Firstly, worldwide, it's the lack of resources. So we have worldwide far too few doctors and specialists in the world. So when you have few, the basic sum of demand and supply means that they can charge more, that it's more difficult to get to them. So you have to produce more. And what we see is developing countries, even the big national health systems in other countries in the developed world, come into countries like South Africa and try and attract our doctors because they themselves aren't producing enough. So you can see then it leaves us with even fewer, and they can demand effectively in the private sector, they can demand exactly higher remuneration for their services. If you try access what we call a specialist in South Africa or even a super specialist in the country, there are some professions where you will wait 6 to 8 months to see that specialist, to give you an idea that they've got a waiting list of 6 to 8 months. In the public sector, it's reflected by the growing queues. So it's not that inflation isn't present, but because people aren't funding personally out of their pockets in the public sector, they're in a space where they don't know that the inflation's growing, but the queues are. The neglect of those public facilities become very apparent. And that is an indication of this global trend in, of health inflation. And it's because we're getting lazier, we're sicker, we actually are dying a lot later, which is a fantastic outcome, isn't it? But what you have is as you age, you require more health services. And so the demand for more health services is also there. And we see that happening throughout the world. And so South Africa is not immune. So the question is, how do you get sufficient funding into the South African healthcare system? And that's a really important place to go. The answer, like to most of our problems here, is that we need better economic growth. We certainly need better employment for those that are unemployed. And in that way, we start generating more revenue in terms of whether it be a tax base or a amount of taxes that you can collect, or whether it's just affordability, that more young people can access healthcare, even in the private sector. The cross-subsidization becomes far easier to achieve. And so there are some remedies in terms of what we need to do. We need to get healthier. We need to be more concerned about our health. We need to eat properly, exercise more. In fact, what we saw during COVID, we saw many people revert to not just heading to the doctor when they've got a sniff or a head cold or something like that. Even during COVID, they self-medicated or they watched, endured maybe the common flus, not the COVIDs, and learned how to not just access healthcare when it's not needed. We need to try and learn, and I think AI and some of the technology is going to step in there to help us know what we have, where we don't have to just access healthcare services up front. We're only for when we absolutely need, we can go and do that. So all these things will work together and are working together in terms of improving the healthcare system. But we must be aware that funding is going to only be reliant on economic growth, employment, and certainly whether our salaries will outstrip inflation in the long term. That's a big determining factor. So in the absence of that, we just said, hey, we can't wait for this all to happen. We need a stopgap specifically for these young doctors. If we need 100,000 young, if we need 100,000 extra doctors in South Africa, how do we actually keep the ones that are coming out of the community service year without losing them to the global markets or making sure that they are not sitting at home, that they're actively pursuing their medical careers? And so as a stopgap, we're looking to have these unemployed doctors employed, even if it is on a locum basis, on a temporary basis, until the permanent roles come through.
All right. And I like the fact that, you're talking about a locum basis and a temporary basis, because I wanted to go back to something that you mentioned earlier on where you said that Finn Doctor is, kind of like a matchmaker, right? And that you have a lot of older doctors in the market that have appetite to either partner with someone or to at least bring in the skills. as and when they need. My understanding when it comes to Fin Doctor is that young doctors are there, they come on, they register on the platform, and just like in the creative sector, we have platforms like Fiverr, when it comes to medical needs, if a doctor needs extra hands, maybe it's a busy time. We often see this practice, particularly in pharmacies, when it comes to, locums and that type of thing, then they can go into that pool, and get people in. And then at least you can maintain you can at least maintain people that have, access to work. My question then is, because of a platform like yours, I'm now thinking to myself, how does a platform like yours grow over time? And when I say grow over time, I'm just wondering how you are seeing employment patterns evolving in the sector, right? Against the backdrop of this conversation that we're having, because in many other professions, I cover my one of my primary focuses is technology, media, and telecoms. And we see a lot of contracting becoming a norm, a way of life in big tech. And by that, we simply mean permanent employment is no longer what it used to be. A person kind of has like a portfolio of one or two places that they are providing their skills and services to. And, that is the market. You particularly see it with developers and that type of thing. I'm wondering do we end up seeing similar trends when it comes to doctors where, as a doctor, you might find yourself at at MediClinic in the morning and then maybe at Netcare in the afternoon, depending, on how you've structured, your life, that it's not necessarily that one place that is going to take you, over time. Yeah, just keen to get your sense around that.
Yeah, there's lots of learnings to take from the COVID experience and even this unemployed young doctor space. I think one thing that people were quite used to during COVID was consulting with a doctor through a video conferencing call, not having to go to a practice. And I think what that enables is a young doctor who's, just think of the young doctor exiting community service. When you speak to them, many of them are at their core want to actually be in the public service because they know the needs there are tremendous. They can make the biggest difference in that sector. So don't misunderstand that they just want to head into private. They actually do want to work in the public sector because the needs are so great there. But if you finish community service and you don't have a role in the public sector, you need to find a way to start a practice. Now, it's quite difficult to all of a sudden get 50, 100 or 200 patients into a practice. And so it takes a long time. Effectively, you need to find consulting rooms, you need to get practice management software, and you need to get receptionists, and you need all these things to start off. And so it becomes capital intensive while you are exiting community service and you don't have access to capital either. So you can see the problem statement starts to emerge. But telemedicine typically can fill that gap. So I think we'll see in the next few years the emergence of more online consulting. We've seen certainly the diagnostic technology available even on your cell phone and on other technology devices becoming more and more frequently used so that the doctor can get instant readings from that technology and consult you over the phone or over the video conferencing. And in that way, reduce the need to find a practice, to find this receptionist and all the other things that go along with that. And I think it's opening up an avenue for younger doctors to be involved at a low capital intensive startup. But I do think that's going to become more prevalent. And what it enables for those that are tired of sitting in the doctor's room and waiting maybe a few hours, because now you're even in a queue at the doctor's room or in the public facility. It will enable a far more affordable and a more brief interaction, and certainly will probably sort out 60% of the concerns without having to do it in person. There's always going to be the other part. You have to go physically and go and see a doctor, and he'll do the manual evaluations and examinations. But for the most, I think this is where the gap emerges for young doctors to be involved in. And I see some of the smaller group practices, or even the larger groups like an Intercare, Medicross, those guys are moving into that space. Even the pharmacy down the road from me, if you go into the pharmacy, you can have a doctor's consult, but it's actually a video consult. The doctor's not in the pharmacy. So we're seeing that emerge, and what that's going to do is allow, again, the young doctors not to have to find all the major capital outsets to start their practices, and they can start doing it in that way. So that, I think, is an emerging trend, but people need to be comfortable with that. So I think even as healthcare consumers, we need to get familiar and comfortable that the digital face scanning assessment can actually do your blood pressure as well as the armband, and that has been accredited and has been proven and is good practice already. So we need to trust, we need to start trusting that as consumers as well. But that is one of the ways I think the future of healthcare is going to move quite quickly.
Yeah, it is very interesting. And one of the big things that COVID confronted many of us with was that you suddenly had to talk about a number of what are considered sensitive issues, in your life over digital means. To your point, a person would much rather go and see a doctor in person and believe that the doctor has seen me, the doctor has prodded, the doctor has felt, the doctor has used a stethoscope and all of that stuff, for them to believe that, okay, fine, this is a true and accurate diagnosis. And, it does require a huge mindset shift. Many people did make the jump during the COVID, but even in 2025, there's still some hesitancy, from certain corners of the market when it comes to, that type of thing. Curious then to then understand, we've looked at this from a number of different points of view, and we've actually looked at it quite a lot from the young doctor's point of view. We've even looked at how consumer behavior might even be an opportunity for, these doctors, and how other professionals in the profession can actually use a platform like FinnDoctor to fill their ranks as and when they need. For medical aids like ProfMed, right? What's been the impact, or what do you anticipate to be, some of the possible impact of, these employment trends that you guys are seeing and noting, outside of the fact that you guys have made, a platform like FinnDoctor, but as a medical aid, any impact there?
Yeah, so one of our biggest risks in ProfMed has been the fact that we monitored, and every person that leaves our medical scheme, we make sure we engage with them and ask them why have they left the medical scheme. I guess that's good practice to understand why customers leave you. The number one reason over the last 5 years has been immigration. We cannot understate the global demand for South African highly and experienced skills in the country. And so the messaging that goes to unemployed young doctors is wrong. We need to make sure that they are valued. These are, in a selfish way for ProfMed, these are our future members. And so hence you can connect why we want to be involved as well. As much as we want to take care of the doctor, but we want to retain as many doctors and send the message to those young doctors that you're needed, that you're valued, that this country has more needs for you than most other countries to go to. So that immigration issue is not one that's a threat to anything. We've seen it materialize over the last 5 years in and amongst our members. It's not affordability. It's not anything else. People are moving because there's attractive markets overseas, and that reduces the number of doctors that we tend to have here in South Africa. So in our mind, our view of trying to help the doctors feel valued is making sure that we retain them as they come out of those community service years, that there's valuable employment available to them, and that they know that they have that, hey, we value all the hard work you have. Your skills are needed here in South Africa.
I'm curious, as a follow-up then, Craig, is that exact risk that you're talking about, are there engagements on perhaps an industry level, you know, to try and address this? FinDoctor is a prof med, you know, solution, but at an industry level, are you talking to your fellow, you know, medical aides, you know, and the like around this particular issue? Obviously, ProfMed is in a slightly different position because your core focus is professionals. So this hits you guys a bit different than it would the others. But on an industry level, are conversations, discussions, and engagements being had about this?
Yeah, so everybody is aware of the small grouping of doctors we have available. So it is an industry issue. As ProfMed, because we have the vested interest, we thought we'd take the lead and we'd start this initiative. But we would welcome even the Department of Health being involved, perhaps as a way to make sure that when people, when doctors leave community service, that they can actually get employment or that they're ready to be employed immediately. That would stop this grouping of very unhappy doctors. It would send the right message that whether it is the public sector or private sector, we're going to find a meaningful role in medicine for you. And so we would welcome involvement from the rest of the industry and even the public sector if they are to join us in this quest to look after the doctors.
All right. So it has been a really great discussion, Craig, and very illuminating for a person like me. And I think where we want to end off is because obviously this is an issue that needs to be attacked from a number of different angles if we're going to be filling the ranks of you know, South Africa's medical profession with the right skills, especially from a doctor point of view. A couple of years ago, I remember that there was a program in place to have, I forget what the word is for these professionals, but they were basically like an in-between of, I won't call it a nurse and a doctor, it's like, you know, an in-between where they have a four-year degree, but they don't go and complete the rest of the, what you call this, the rest of the, I believe it's 7 years in total. And my understanding was that that was meant to have been a stopgap, you know, measure as well, you know, to say you don't always need a fully trained doctor. What we need is to make sure that we have people that have the right skills to be able to diagnose certain things and just do certain treatments so that our hospitals are well equipped and we can make sure that people are treated. Within the context of today's conversations, has something like that helped, you know, when it comes to, you know, filling in the gaps that you were highlighting throughout today's conversation?
Yeah, I think that's a symptom of not having sufficient healthcare workers rather than just the right approach. But we have seen some of the scope changes in terms of practices, even for pharmacists. So pharmacists could do initial diagnosis, et cetera, but on a limited scope. So that would help. In fact, even before some of the nurses, there are community health workers in the different communities that actually play quite a fundamental role of education and awareness of health risk. So we mustn't discount the need for the full health chain, even from those community service specialists all the way through to the very specialized doctors. They are all under pressure. We need more of them. We certainly need better health in South Africa.
All right. That's how we end off today's discussion. It has been a great one. Just understanding what's happening in the world of doctors and specifically unemployment in that particular sector. Craig just giving us a sense of what's been happening in the space, especially over what I'm going to call the medium, the short to medium term, which is about 3 to 5 years. What they've been seeing in the market, he says at some point, they had noted that there were around 800 doctors, that were coming out of places like community service that were unemployed in the market. But, some of the latest stats that they have is that the number has actually even risen to 1,800, sort of showing just how big of an issue is, because that's more than doubling, that unemployment rate. And it was actually quite fascinating hearing some of the reasons why doctors are unemployed. And he says the main reason is around funding. You can say that a market needs 100,000 doctors, and that's what South Africa's gap is, according to what he was saying. But it's quite another conversation to actually fund those 100,000 those 100,000 roles, particularly in the private sector, because a lot of people want to go into the public sector. However, the opportunities aren't always there, and hence people find themselves coming to the private sector, getting into some of the big hospital groups, or starting their own practice. But he was saying starting your own practice is not an easy feat, a lot of capital requirements, and quite honestly, there's a lack of experience that is just prevalent at those young ages, because you're just coming out of community service. You don't have a lot of years, which means there aren't a lot of people that know you. You don't have a big patient base. So going out and striking out on your own is not only expensive financially, but those costs could even multiply, if you aren't able to get that, if you don't have that ready patient base, in place. Also giving us a sense of, to say some of the gaps and how they're being fulfilled. Platform like FinDoctor trying to matchmake, to say that doctors and doctors' practices can flex up or down their needs, and at least that allows those that are unemployed to continue to work and gain that experience over time. Also giving us a sense of how employment trends are changing over time, and how things like technology can actually help to reduce some of the capital requirements when it comes to either starting your own practice or what it takes to be a doctor and actually consult. But also that requires a bit of a shift from the consumer base themselves, to actually make that happen. And then obviously ending off talking to us about what impact something like this has on a company like ProfMed, because they are geared towards professionals. And, as much as we talk about the big issue, they themselves are looking at, ways and strategies on, how they can ensure their own member base over time. So that's been it. We were in discussion with Craig Comrie. He is the CEO of ProfMed, giving us some insight into the state of unemployment amongst doctors. Craig, thank you so much for being with us today.
It's a pleasure, and good to be with you again.
And that's been it for this edition of the Business Day Spotlight. Remember that you can find our latest podcasts on Business Live. That's under the podcast Business Day Spotlight tab on Twitter with hashtag BD Spotlight. And remember that you can review and subscribe for free on iono.fm, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Pocket Casts, or wherever you choose to get your pods casted. Thank you to our amazing team. I've been Mudiwa Gavaza of the Business Day and Financial Mail. And this has been another edition of the Business Day Spotlight, which is a multimedia live production. So, from myself and the rest of the team, it is good evening, good afternoon, and good morning.